Welcome to episode number 226 of Lethal Mullet Podcast, brought to you here on the Facebook page at The Lethal Mullet on Facebook, and also on the audio. You'll be catching this on, of course, fpnet.podbean.com on the Phantom Podcast Network. We've come home, folks. That's right. We've gone home to our main channel, which is just a huge, great plus for us to return to where we began this podcast many years ago. And it's great to obviously get back with, of course, Kevin the Raider Nerd Reisel and, of course, Kyle Wagner, the founders of this amazing channel that gave us the platform to obviously love action film cinema, which is something we're going to be doing tonight here, of course, looking at Christophe Lambert's Fortress, which is an interesting one. We actually had that out here as a production. That's right, out here on the Gold Coast of Australia, in between both the city of Brisbane and the Gold Coast, some locations we used as well. And of course, it's got the massive prison sets and stuff like that, and a lot of great Australian actors, and even one Mad Max villain, and a villain from a Schwarzenegger picture, plus a villain from RoboCop. This is a great flick, which we're going to talk about. Lots of sci-fi involved in this one. And at the end of the day, it's great that we can lay claim to, obviously, this being made out here. And what an amazing film, folks. This is a great flick, which, you know, did have in it a sequel. And a sequel that came out many years later. But it's beloved by sci-fi audiences. And, you know, it's got everything. Action, comedy, a bit of horror, a bit of scares. But if anything, it's got Christophe Lambert. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien. Welcome to the show here and, of course, the Lethal Mullet Podcast, where we look at action films from the past right through to the present. And tonight, what we've got is no slouch in the action department, something that's a, you know, classic bit of 90s sci-fi. And I just happen to have the original VHS. That's right. So even though I've got the Blu-ray and the DVD of this, this is the original and I think better art, personally, when it comes to the packaging. The Australian version of it, which is brought out by Roadshow Entertainment, and of course great one with obviously all the little nooks and crannies. It even has where it was made there, Movie World, which is actually where the sets for the film were taking place, right there as well. This is a great one, which particularly for locals out here in Australia, you can go and actually visit parts of the set, particularly the American and Canadian border, which was done actually on the bridge, which goes between Brisbane City and, of course, or Logan City in this case, and the Gold Coast, between Beenleigh and, of course, Logan Lee, Logan Village, all that sort of area too. Fantastic location. Even just in itself, it's an interesting parkland area now for families that have barbecues and stuff like that too. And it's just a walkway bridge because now they've got a freeway that goes past that, and they've got many more lanes instead of just the two-way that it was back in the day. And I still remember from moving up years ago from New South Wales with a family where we had to use that bridge instead to go from Brisbane to the Gold Coast because we had family there and we were living in Brisbane at the time. But this is great. This is obviously a movie which, you know, it's not what you would call the greatest movie ever made. But it is a really nice bit of sci-fi, and you know, with the budget that they've got and what they tried to accomplish, I think they did pretty damn well, particularly at the time where we had some massive films, obviously, in the late 80s. You know, there was a real resurgence of strong, powerful sci-fi. We had the James Cameron films. We had, obviously, the Star Wars films at the start of that decade. But as we moved towards it, you know, 1990s and stuff like that, this was coming back. RoboCop and obviously Terminator 2 was around the corner, Total Recall, some big, bold, alpha male action at the time. But of course, then we've got Christophe Lambert, who, you know, yes, he's an action star, but he has something that the others don't have. And I think that always had for particularly us, the action fans, was entertaining, was his sense of humor. You know, really humanized, you know, who he was, what his plight was. And as Connor McLeod in the Highlander franchise, he really nailed it. You know, we kept coming back. Why? Because here's this guy you see the torture of being alive so long on his own mortality. You know, how he's going through, obviously, all the years. And, of course, as an immortal, the big thing of, you know, that he has to watch the ones he loves, you know, die of old age, whereas he will stay the same and continue to live. So it's an interesting series, and it was the perfect actor for that, along with, of course, the great cast of Sean Connery and, of course, Clancy Brown and many others in that original movie, which they said there can be only one. But that wasn't true, folks, because there can be many sequels, because it made money, and it made the money, didn't it? and so we got this amazing TV series afterwards, and to all the Highlander fans out there today, you know, it's thanks to you guys too that, you know, this is a well-loved franchise. And even to today, you know, we've obviously got on the network a podcast that is directed right towards that love and fandom, which, of course, is the one, the only great podcast. That is, of course, Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by, of course, Kevin, the Raider Nerd, Reitzel, and, of course, Lee Fillingsness, my dear martial brother from another martial art mother. And, of course, they love everything of that over there. And so go and check it out. And, of course, you've been following this channel and at least the audio podcast of it. I've been actually re-watching that series right through the full set of seasons. And I've done, I think, up to season two in my recap of it. And so you can catch that on the channel. It's out there. It's on the FPN audio website as well. But you can also check out soon. I'll be doing season three. And I hope to have Sensei, Andy Sloan, my dear pal, and my karate brother, I will say, to come and join us here on the show and chat about season three, because I really need his insight into what makes that season in particular the one that takes off. Just like Star Trek The Next Generation, the third season of Highlander is when things are straight up in the air and to excellence. And even though first two seasons are actually very entertaining and really set the groundwork for everything that's in that series, it's all there. What is fantastic is that when we get to that point, everything just takes it up a notch, and the characters get some really interesting storylines and different things that happen to them. And of course, we get inclusions of many new characters and, of course, character arcs. So can't wait for that. We're going to look at that. Obviously, there's a quite an interesting samurai influence to the start of that season. We get to find out how Duncan got his sword. Duncan MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod. Big cheery to all those out there. And, of course, salute all of you Highlander fans. And, of course, those that want to see the new Highlander. Well, that's the big one, isn't it? What is going to happen with this new Highlander film or series? You know, we've got Chad Stahelski obviously behind it and still in some form of production at this stage. Maybe not actually making the film as such right now, but whether they're still doing concept work on it, or concept of just exactly what they're going to do. You know, at one stage, obviously, Henry Cavill was attached to it, and then I don't know what happened there, whether he's still attached or whether he's moved on to the Warhammer products line that he was looking at turning into, obviously, a series of films. Now, for you out there that don't play games and don't do miniatures and stuff like that, that is a huge franchise. It's massive. Warhammer 40K, or 40K as it's mainly known, is huge, whether it's you know, over here, the States, worldwide, whatever it is. It is a massive gaming line, and obviously too, when it comes to the little miniatures, you know, something that's very artistic that a lot of people are getting right into. And obviously you can see them paint these amazing little warrior miniatures, these Marines, if you like, Ultramarines, Commandos, whatever you want to call it. And of course, they're part of this massive, huge, futuristic and horror-based line. It's very, very much something that I'd like to see live action at one stage. Now, there has been an animated feature done in about, I think it was 2011 it came out, called Ultramarines, which was an interesting one. It had some great big names attached to it, namely Zod, Terrence Stamp, Neil before Ultramarines. He was in that too. So something worth looking at, and something that Henry Cavill has an absolutely massive passion for. It's huge in the UK, folks. So you can see kind of why he got into that. And he's a big gamer. So he loves doing RPGs and all that sort of stuff too. So I think in the end of the day, that will be where his heart lies. Who knows, we might get Chris Hemsworth as some type of lead in this new series. But, you know, it's only around the corner. All right, so tonight, folks, we're going to be chatting about, obviously, something that is well and truly one of my favorite things in the world, and that is, of course, Fortress. Mainly because, of course, shot out here, but also because it's a damn good film. It takes elements of things that we've seen in the past, but also chucking into a futuristic prison film with intestinators and many other things. We have covered this film in the past. I think it was back in 2021 or 2020. And it was one that, you know, brought a bit of the insight that I've had and definitely shown a few of our podcasting buddies out there that exact location that we were talking about earlier, which is a bridge called the Red Bridge, down, of course, in Bean Lee and, of course, heading towards the northern end of Logan City. So that, of course, is one of the many things and one of the things that opens this film, which we're going to cover right here and now. But Kevin the Raider Nerd Reisel came out with his wife, Erin, in about 2017. And along with some friends, we went down to, of course, this bridge. And we took a little bit of footage down there at the time. And, of course, ran around stupid with some mullets. And really enjoyed, obviously, checking out. You know, this is a bridge that we've always known as just the one that you cross to get to the, obviously, the beach, to get to Gold Coast. But, of course, it's a little bit different when you talk about it in terms of film. And, of course, we looked at the camera angles that they were using and obviously where to the different cars were coming through to get to the other side. So it is an interesting location nonetheless for that, but also where people were abseiling down in front of, obviously, our heroes to capture them and obviously stop them from getting across the border. Great work to see that, obviously, Kevin came out for that. And he really enjoyed it. Now, of course, then we went to, after that, a famous pie shop here in Australia. So obviously, all those searching locations makes you hungry. All right, let's have a look at this film and why it persists to be one of the better ones shot here in Australia. Fortress is a 1992 sci-fi indie film. All right, so it is an independent movie. It was directed by, of course, Stuart Gordon and shot in, of course, Queensland, Australia, which is where you are seeing me broadcast from right now. Same area. So it was shot at now near Warner Brothers Movie World, which is a theme park, actually, folks. It's not a movie studio as such, even though it is, really. But it has also next to it a studio lot. And I don't know exactly how many studio spots it has there, but it's got at least, I would say, 5 or 6 different locations that you can use for filming there too. There's lots of films over the years that they've shot there. Street Fighter was one, Phantom as well with Billy Zane, a number of Marvel projects and some 20th Century Fox ones at one stage there too, and Aquaman was shot there as well. A lot of the other films that are shot in Australia are shot down at Fox Studios, which is down in Sydney. So things like Alien Covenant were shot there as well. So it was shot down here and it takes place in a dystopian future, which a lot of Australian films that are sci-fi tend to do. This one is no slouch in that. It really does build upon that whole idea that the world has gone to basically hell. So from here, the main character is a guy by the name of John Henry Brennick, or just Brennick as he's called by everybody in this. Played by, of course, Christophe Lambert. And of course, then he's got his wife, Karen, played by Lauren Loughlin, who are sent to a maximum security prison. And they're sent there because they're trying to get a second child and get it across the border into Canada while she's pregnant. But the US at the time has a strict one-child policy. And although this was a big success at the time when it comes to the terms of financial and obviously box office and stuff like that too, it was critically a bit mixed. You know, I've got a funny thing, I think, with these critics, or my thoughts on critics are quite funny, I should say. I always think critics most times go with the flow of what's popular, you know, which is the same as us as moviegoers do too. So it's interesting. It's sort of fashionable to go for this or that or vice versa. But when it comes to, you know, science fiction, I think they're in the heat of the moment. If, you know, say The Matrix had come out, anything that's not The Matrix is given a bit harder time of review and stuff like that too. So, you know, I prefer to go with what the audience likes because at the end of the day, we're part of the audience too, aren't we? That's just the way of looking at things. So we've also got with this, a sequel that came out too. And the sequel's interesting because, you know, it didn't have the same feel 100%, but it's still, it's part of the franchise. I do believe that wasn't obviously shot here in Australia too, shot in Canada or something like that too. All right, so the film is actually set in the past, go figure, 2017. John Brennick is an ex-army officer. He's trying to get across into, of course, the Canada states, across the border into Vancouver, where you're allowed to have as many children as you want, I guess. But of course, at the time, the country they're living in only has the one-child policy. So, of course, they're going through, at the start of the film, through that bridge that we were talking about earlier, and they're trying to get into that next place. But of course, in this case, they get caught by the security and captured. He's caught, and of course, from here, he actually believes that Karen got away, that she ran through the bridge into, of course, the next state. From here, he is then sentenced to 30 years at the Fortress, which is this 30-level maximum security prison run by a corporation called Mentel. Now, again, 80s is great for a lot of these great sort of futuristic names of companies and stuff like that. And this is, you've got Omnicorp, more OCP that we've got in, obviously, another franchise, which we'll talk about in a sec too, because it does tie to this in some of the casting. But of course, Mentel Corporation is the one that's the futuristic outer body here that's looking after things like this. Brennick and others are shown coming in, and they get this sort of introduction into what the place is via video and stuff like that too. And they are told exactly what they are going to be doing, and they are slave labor, basically, to expand the prison and to push it further out, give more area. From here, they're also embedded with something in their stomachs called the intestinators. An intestinator is a device that goes into your body, into your intestines. And from here, Mentel Corporation guards and obviously the owners can then use those intestinators to cause you pain or to kill you. There's a small warhead, if you like, or a little explosive inside that too, which they can then also click and it's over Red Rover, basically. And of course, for science fiction, this is great because they can cause whatever pain they want to do in this, this situation by doing that. And this is actually part of the big picture of the actual film itself is these intestinators and how they're able to fool the intestinator or even just get rid of the intestinator so that they can actually get out of the prison and escape. So from here, we get to see Christophe Lambert meet some of the other prisons, and it's run by Director Poe, who oversees a computer by the name of Z10. This computer monitors everything in the entire place and has its own agenda, folks, completely. But again, Director Poe is basically, from what we gather, somebody that's running the entire operation himself, and that's pretty much all we're left to at this stage. Of course, played by, of course, Kurtwood Smith from, of course, RoboCop. Kurtwood Smith, always fantastic in particularly these sorts of roles. And I think he was the best actor in RoboCop. We get some of the best scenes where I don't know how people were keeping a straight face. It's some of the great lines that he has, in that film too. And he's just always really good. He was also in the Magnificent Seven TV show with Michael Biehn, where he played the villain in the pilot episode. So he's in prison with a bunch of different inmates, with Abraham, who's basically a model prisoner, one who basically from here is one that works for Poe, and he's basically the servant in the office up there. But what he doesn't realize is just how much Abraham's working against him by getting the layout of the place and obviously giving that information over to Brennick. We also have D-Day, who's a demolitions guy, basically an expert in demolitions, who's able to give all that sort of information. We've got Nino Gomez, who's a young offender who doesn't want to really be part of anything, but and is very quite, if anything, quite innocent in this place too. And you've got Stiggs, who's basically trying to run, different gigs all over the place and trying to also extort, if anything, Brennick as well, too, which is quite interesting, too. So Brennick eventually finds out that Karen has been captured and is now, especially the baby, is owned by the Mentel Corporation. And as soon as she has the baby, it'll be confiscated and then given to Mentel itself too. So from here, we find out that Stiggs has a buddy that's trying to do the same thing in the rest of the prison, basically to cause trouble and obviously dominate the prison. And his friend's called Maddox. And of course, Maddox comes from time to time to try and really get in the face of Brennick. And, you know, things happen here and there. There's some brawls, usual sort of prison thing. But in this prison setting, all the levels don't have any fence line, if you like. Everything's done by laser. So if you put your face up to it, you're going to get your face burned off or, if anything, decapitated. From here, of course, Maddox gets in quite a big fight in the middle with Brennick. And to the point where Mentel set their sentry guns up ready to fire. And it's at such a point where Maddox actually sees eye to eye with Brennick at that stage too. And wait till I tell you who actually plays that character. Now, from here, Director Poe actually gets to the point where he starts to fall in love with, of course, Brennick's wife, Karen. And Karen plays on that so that she can try and find her way out of the prison too as well. Coming down to it, of course, Poe is absolutely blind to what's happening down below, where, of course, Brennick is figuring out a way to get the intestinators out by using magnets through his team. And once that happens, they're able to actually move freely through the prison and find their way out. What's left at the end is an amazing shootout with some very bizarre-looking science fiction weapons, which I know you could probably see on the cover. They sort of... I guess they're made up to look like, you know, let's bring that closer. You can see that there. It's kind of, you put your arm into it and you've got the three barrels, which kind of look like mini guns, kind of. The only weird thing is they've got this, I don't know if you can see in the case there, but you got this huge long belt, which doesn't really clip into anything. So I kind of wonder, is that just a belt you put over and then you fire? But usually with a mini gun or something like that, it's at least clipped into some type of larger capacity thing, like a backpack. It was always odd, but this is sci-fi. Who knows what that is? You know, it's definitely something, munitions or something like that. But basically ripping that off one of the soldiers, or the robot soldiers, if you like, that's when they start to go to town and, of course, work their way up to the top and, of course, take out Poe. Classic sci-fi, folks. And, you know, running at a very short time, like 19 minutes, maybe something like that. It is well worth the watch. So let's have a look at some of the hard data. All right, so the hard data on this sci-fi film. Directed by, of course, Stuart Gordon and written by Troy Neighbors and Steven Feinberg. The story is pretty damn good. Like, for what it is, it's definitely, I wouldn't call it a generic story. It's definitely, as in, you know, it's done, been done and done and done before. But it's definitely something that's probably been done and inside sci-fi. Outside the sci-fi unit. Inside sci-fi, not so much. Produced by John Davis and John Flock. David Egbie was a cinematographer on this one too. And this was done by the Davis Entertainment Company and Village Roadshow Pictures. So Village Roadshow Pictures is the one that is attached to, of course, Movie World down here on the Gold Coast. And for those that are watching on the Facebook page, I'll... start to put out some stuff about that. If you're outside the country in particular, give you some information about that attraction. It's definitely something worth checking out, at least if you're in the vicinity in Queensland at the time for holiday or whatever. It is a great place to go and check out. It's predominantly Warner Brothers, but there's obviously too a studio attached to it. And they used to do a studio tour. I don't know if they still do, but they had everything from different Foley stuff you could check out. You could actually watch people do the scene in Lethal Weapon 2 where you meet Leo Getz and the stuntman gets thrown out the window, and they use the Foley to build that scene up. There's also in that one too a blue screen or a green screen scene where you get to actually stay on the side of the building in Superman where Lois Lane's about to fall, and of course Superman comes along and saves him. And again, that's using trickery of the screen. And also the Memphis Bell, the shooting version of the Memphis Bell was there in that studio at the time. So it's an interesting studio to go and check out. If you like film like I do, it's definitely something worth checking out. All right, so with that too, the film was 91 minutes long. It was released in Australia, the 21st of January 1993, and it was released in October of 92 at the Fantasy Film Festival, and in the US, the 3rd of September 1993. It's interesting. So, yeah, it's quite different release times. Maybe it's because it was an independent film. I mean, could have been many reasons that. The budget was $12 billion and it did $48 million. So quite a success at the time. All right, the cast. Christophe Lambert plays John Henry Brenning, obviously the protagonist of the movie, and captain of the Black Beret Special Forces Squadron. Interesting. This is really getting down to it. It's a Christophe Lambert film. You know what you're getting with the humor, the dry humor that works so well, which, you know, I don't think he's always had. Some people have said to me that, you know, maybe he got that kind of feel from working with Sean Connery, who's got similar. But no, I think Christophe Lambert's always had that great sense of humor. Lauren Loughlin is Karen B. Brennick, and she's the computer programmer from the Army, where they became husband and wife. And, of course, had the baby. Anika Thomas plays the Brennick baby. And we've also got, of course, as director Poe, Kurtwood Smith, which we already talked about. Now, what we haven't talked about as Nino Gomez in this is Clifton Collins Jr., who is just an actor who's a tour de force when it comes to great films. And, you always see him around. He was in the Boondock Saints. He was in Star Trek. He's in a ton of great films over the years. And I do believe he was even in Westworld, the TV series, in at least the first season too. Great actor, and he's always worth checking out. Carolyn Purdy Gordon as Z-10's voice. You know, again, pretty much a character in its own right in this too. As it's, you know, Z-10's got its own, mission, if you like. Lincoln Kilpatrick plays Abraham, and he's great in this. I think, he's somebody who's willing to just go along with where he is, pretty much. You know, he's a prisoner, but he's got a good working in, obviously, the upper levels. But at the end of the day, he doesn't know whether he's going to get out for good behavior and vice versa, and decides, instead of just being basically a trustee to these guys, that he can get freed and be free. And so he does as well. He does very well in this. Now, as D-Day, we've got Jeffrey Combs, who does a fantastic job of this. Jeffrey Combs is always interesting. Where you put him in Star Trek or vice versa, he is a fantastic addition. And in this one, he just plays a crazy dude that knows how to blow things up and pull them apart and all that sort of stuff. Fantastic. Now, here's the other one that's interesting. Yes, you know the one. The man himself from, of course, Commando, and, of course, from Mad Max 2 and many others. That's, of course, Vernon Wells plays Maddox in this. And basically, he's the bully of the place. You know, he's the one that's pulling all the strings and trying to get everyone riled up. We also got Maddox's buddy, we've got Tom Tolles in this too. And he's great in this too. Because he kind of, once Maddox is out of the picture, he basically turns back to being a fairly decent chap and wants to help. So the film came out on VHS and Laserdisc in 94 by Live Home Video. In Australia, well, we already talked about where you can get this one too, Village Roadshow. And, you know, it was classic because these films were coming out pretty early on after the cinema release, if they were in here in Australia too. It was re-released on DVD in 1999, and they came out by Artisan Entertainment, and Columbia TriStar released the film on VHS as well, Laserdisc and DVD in other places. Sony actually had rights to some of them as well from 2006 to 2017, which might be the DVD copy that I've got, which, you know, it is what it is. And there was also a Blu-ray that came out in 2017, and it had steelbook cover as well too. Now, some interesting details on this one, particularly how this sort of was going to end originally. The original ending had been taken out from different versions of the movie, so which is interesting. So what was going to happen was, when they got to Mexico, Brennick, his wife, and of course Gomez as well, end up at a barn where she starts going to labor, having the baby. Gomez goes out of the truck to get a blanket for the son, the Fortress computer Z-10 manages to establish a remote link up with the truck, overriding its controls. From here, the truck comes to life and runs Gomez over, killing him, and Brennick shoots the truck with the Strike clone machine gun until it seems to jam. He then sets it on fire with a flamethrower, and the truck crashes into the barn, exploding. Brennick climbs over the burning ruins to find his wife sitting against a tractor, clutching the newborn baby. Kind of a weird way to end it. I mean, that's what it says here too. You can find this on Wikipedia, that information. But I don't know. Is that the way to end? I think the ending that they had was fine enough. I'm not somebody that likes multiple endings like a certain Lord of the Rings movie. You know, to me, no, it should be, you know, bag it out, get it out there. You've got the job done there, out of the prison. That's it. You know, if anything, maybe a truck chase. Maybe they get in the truck that took them there and take off. Because again, that was one of the interesting ones there too. Futuristic Mack truck or whatever. That sort of stuff goes quite well hand in hand. The final shootout's great, but I think the big thing about this movie, a little bit like Uncommon Valor to some way, the action is okay. It's not great, but it's the character moments in this that make this movie the best. You get to know everybody, and you give a damn about them as well. This film gets a solid 5 out of 5 on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Podcast's review. So, folks, I hope you've liked this one. Looking at, of course, The Great Fortress, episode number 226. Yeah, I've always loved going back to this movie, and, of course, why it, you know, it's something that I've enjoyed when I was younger, and I enjoy going out to seeing the locations of. And stick with us, folks, because we are going to look at a lot more films and where they come from in terms of the locations that were shot on here in Australia. We're going to be looking at Phantom again. We're going to be looking at Street Fighter soon as well. Why? Because we all give a damn about those ones. They're great. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien. We'll catch you next time on, of course, Lethal Live.